It's the Sound Kitchen.
Mmm, yummy.
It's the Sound Kitchen.
Ooh, that sounds delicious.
You're listening to the Sound Kitchen.
Yummy.
And Susan Owensby is cooking.
And welcome to the Sound Kitchen, where you never know what you'll be served. I'm Susan Owensby. It's Saturday, the 26th of October, the 299th day of the year in the Gregorian calendar. There are only 66 days left in 2024, which means it's time to start thinking about your New Year's resolutions for our annual New Year's Day show, made up of your good intentions for 2025. So if you've already made up your mind about what you'll aim for in 2025, great, go ahead and send it to us. If not, be sure you send us your resolution or resolutions, if you are really ambitious, by the 15th of December. And mark your calendars now for the 12th of December, 6 p.m. Paris time. That's when the winners of the EPOP video competition will be announced live on the EPOP Facebook page. My good pals Max and Gail, who run the Planet Radio department that sponsors EPOP, invited me to come on the show to talk to you for a few minutes in English. So plan to stay up late or get up early, depending on where you are, on the 12th of December, my beloved listeners.
This is Radio France International. Let's find out what's cooking in the Sound Kitchen.
Hail, hail, the gang's all here. Erwan Rome is waving hello from behind the glass window where he is master of the mixing board. And our co-chef Paul Myers, also known as Baby Brother, is right here next to me after a good long break. Say hello, baby brother.
Hello, big sister.
You were far, far, far from Paris. Tell us all.
How long have you got? I have been in Malaysia and Australia. I was in Kuala Lumpur for a week, and then I got on a very rickety plane from Kuala Lumpur, landed in Perth in Western Australia, and spent 2.5 weeks just outside Perth in a place called Fremantle. And I took a trip down to a place called Margaret River, where they're all into organic farming and leading a very eco life. And that includes the vineyards.
So, nice.
Did a bit of wine touring, but just taking it easy and recovering from all my exploits during the Olympics and the Paralympics, of course, and getting some sun and seeing an old friend. That was the main reason for being there. An old university friend lives there and has been living there for 35 years, actually.
Wow.
But this is my first visit to see him and his family. He has been over to Europe in the intervening years, but I went there. And I was only supposed to spend 10 days, but I was having such a good time. And they love me so much.
Bien, of course they do.
I extended my stay.
Oh, very good, very good.
They approved of that.
What is it they say? To throw some meat on the barbie for barbecue? Aren't they big barbecuers in Australia?
Yeah, but we didn't do a barbecue. Didn't go for one at all, but ate well.
I'm glad you had a good break. I'm very glad you're back. Do you have any pictures we can put on the Facebook page about?
Have a look through. Okay. I took lots of pictures, but it's more of Mark Sarah and his son Justin and bits of the beach with no one on it.
Okay.
There's a selfie of me trying to take a picture on the beach.
Oh. That might be a good one.
Yeah. Yeah, looking confused. Who's that idiot in the photo? And a few bits of greenery when I was down in Margaret River. And went into some caves, actually.
Oh.
Yeah, they've this Margaret River section is famous for some caves. So we went into one and saw it was where place stalagmites, stalactites, some fossils from a giant kangaroo, which is extinct, which had long arms rather than the short ones.
Wow.
And giant, Tasmanian devils was there. And I did actually see kangaroos.
In
the field, yeah.
We
were driving along to the caves and then there were some kangaroos. So Mark stopped the car because he just said it just, oh, there's some kangaroos. And apparently it's really quite unusual to see them.
Oh, really?
Out just doing what they do. And so I, the car stopped and I got down like one of these SWAT tactical assault things and went down the side of the car and then got my phone ready and then started filming before I raised my head. So these two kangaroos just looked at me and as if to say, what a complete and utter idiot. they posed and they looked at me, they looked at themselves and said, well, we better put on a show. And so they got together and then hopped and then just sped off across the field. And it was spectacular.
That
might be worth putting on the Facebook page.
Oh, yes.
Yeah, because...
Did they have babies in their pouch?
I didn't get that close, Susan.
Okay.
And, because normally when they just dart off, but when they got going, it was really quick. And, I couldn't keep up with them because, they were really rapid. So that was it. I saw some kangaroos. Mark Everdry said, that's actually quite unusual. He said he was in Australia for a good couple of years before he saw kangaroos in a field just like that. So I was very, very fortunate.
Oh, the kangaroo goddess was looking out after you.
In this real kind of dirtback road.
Oh,
we took the wrong turning and saw two kangaroos. It was lovely.
Oh, excellent.
I was really, really pleased, actually.
Oh, yeah.
Seeing kangaroos.
Well, you're not going to see any of those in Paris. Without further ado, let's get started. Still to come, the quiz, your answers to the bonus question on the Listener's Corner with Paul Byers, and a tasty musical dessert from Erwan Rome on Music from Erwan. So don't touch that dial.
Are you ready? I do hope so.
And so do I, cuz it's time for the quiz. On Alison Hurd and Sarah Elza's Spotlight on France podcast number 115, Alison produced a piece on France's current governmental crisis and the lack of an ability in the French political landscape to compromise. As Alison noted, France does not have the tradition of coalition building, more commonly found in Germany, Switzerland, and the Nordic countries. As social scientist Loïc Blondiot told Le Monde, and I quote, "The idea of deliberation, organized, reasoned debate in the form of an exchange of arguments, has never had the force and legitimacy in France that it has in other countries. A specific trait of our political culture is, on the contrary, contempt for consensus. Compromise is often seen as synonymous with giving in and weakness," end quote. As Alison noted, France's current system, the Fifth Republic, strengthened the executive branch, making the National Assembly an extension of the president's will. This is also not conducive to compromise. I asked you to re-listen to Alison's report and send in the answer to this question. How many political groups are there in France's National Assembly? Paul, what's the answer?
As Laure Guillot-Assayag, a researcher in political science and philosophy, told Alison, there are 11 political groups in the National Assembly. It's a record. A culture of compromise is more necessary than ever if the government is to function in such a deeply divided political landscape. In addition to the quiz question, there was the bonus question. What is the most wonderful thing you've ever seen in a museum? You'll hear the answers later in the Listener's Corner, so please stay with us.
The winners of this week's quiz are Salim Akhtar, the president of the RFI Seven Stars Radio Listening Club in District Chinio, Pakistan. Salim is also the winner of this week's bonus question. He wrote, "In 2020, I visited Harappa, the archaeological site in Punjab, Pakistan. The Bronze Age Harappan civilization, now more often called the Indus Valley civilization, existed from approximately 3500 to 1500 BCE. The wonderful things I saw in the Harappan old city were its modern settlement and urbanization. The cities are well known for their impressive, organized, built-on-mud-brick platforms, their proper urban planning with underground drainage systems, and the use of burnt bricks as standard materials. There were grain stores, a marketplace, bathrooms even. Some of the major finds from the site in the museum include seals, games, weights, pottery, and figurines of all sorts. In the museum, I saw also that most of the items are made of stone, shell, and metal, including copper, bronze, gold, and silver. Copper and bronze were used to make tools, weapons, ornaments, and vessels. Gold and silver were also used to make ornaments and vessels. So the Harappa civilization was an incredibly modern civilization for the time. Congratulations, Salim, my brother, on your double win." Also on the list of lucky winners this week are Sakaroon Islam Mittu, who's a member of the RFI Amur fan club in Rajshahi, Bangladesh. Also from Rajshahi, RFI English listener Sumaya Akhtar, who's a member of the World DX International Radio Fan Club. Rounding out this week's list of lucky winners are Ferhat Bezazel, the president of the RFI Butterflies Club Ain Kachera in West Skikta, Algeria. And finally, RFI English listener Abdul Rehman, who's a member of the International Radio Fan and Youth Club in Kanawal, Pakistan. Congratulations to this week's winners, and thanks to each and every one of you who wrote in. The COP16 Biodiversity Summit opened on Monday in Cali, Colombia, with leaders and delegates from over 200 countries in attendance. RFI English journalist Amanda Morrow wrote about what's at stake at this COP in her article, "Ecosystems Hang in the Balance as Colombia Hosts Crucial Biodiversity Talks." As she noted, and I quote, "The 12-day event will serve as the first major checkpoint on commitments made a year ago to safeguard 30% of the planet's land and seas by 2030. Other key targets include restoring degraded ecosystems, reducing pesticide use, cutting destructive farming subsidies, and tackling invasive species," end quote. Not much has happened since last year. As Amanda noted, as of this date, only 17% of land and about 8% of oceans are protected, a far cry from the 30% committed to at COP15. Money promised is also far behind schedule, and there's your question. How much money was promised by wealthy nations to support biodiversity protection in developing countries, and how much has been delivered? Again, reread Amanda Morrow's article, "Ecosystems Hang in the Balance as Colombia Hosts Crucial Biodiversity Talks," and send in the answer to this question. How much money was promised by wealthy nations to support biodiversity protection in developing countries, and how much of that money has been secured? You'll find Amanda's article on the Sound Kitchen page on our website, rfienglish.com, as well as on the Sound Kitchen and the RFI English Listeners Forum Facebook pages. Hey, Paul, what's this week's bonus question?
It is, imagine that France's President Emmanuel Macron came to visit your city. Which three places would you take him to?
We better talk about our home cities. I think he probably knows Paris well enough. Yeah, so where in London would you take our chef d'état?
It's a curious one, that one, actually, because, well, I don't think we'd start at my Central London club for aperos. I think that would be fine. I'd take him to Soho House. And then take him down to Tooting Beck Lido swimming pool, which is, I did a story on it years and years ago. It's one of the oldest in Britain, and it's certainly one of the biggest. It's about 190 metres long, about 30 metres wide, and obviously it's open air, and it's got all these lovely painted doors around it. So I'm sure we could have a cup of tea early in the morning there. And then I would take him to a pub called The Eagle in Farringdon Road, which is near where the Guardian newspaper used to be. And I used to go to The Eagle lots and lots of times. It's my favourite eating place in London. Many memories. And they also do a very good steak sandwich. So I could chomp with Emmanuel. The Eagle. I think you'd like it. Sit outside and watch all the traffic go by and get clobbed up. Say, hey, what do you make of that, Macca? Those are the three places, and you?
Well, okay, so Austin, Texas is my home city. I would make Monsieur le President put on his bathing suit.
Oh, yeah, there you go.
And jump into Barton Springs, our 20-degree year-round swimming pool. It's not a classic swimming pool. There's no concrete, and it's fed by an underground stream. It's huge. It's close to 2 hectares. Then we'd go to one of the cafes close to Congress Avenue on Town Lake to watch the bats come out. Yeah, you heard that right. There isn't a lot to do in Austin. At dusk, about 10 zillion bats fly out from underneath the Congress Avenue Bridge. Okay, it's gross. But we love our bats because they eat mosquitoes, who unfortunately love us. Then I'd whisk him off to dinner at the Mexican restaurant Matt's El Rancho. It opened in 1952 and, with typical Texan modesty, bills itself as the best Mexican restaurant in the world. I kind of agree. I get off the plane and go straight there. And between those three places, President Macron would have a pretty good idea of Austin. Now, I do have photos of Barton Springs and Matt's El Rancho, and I'll see if I can't find some bat pictures, which I'll post on the Facebook pages for you. Paul, do you have photos of your three places?
I could probably rustle up certainly one official one of Tooting Beck Lido. Eagle, no, but that's fairly easy. I can always get a snap on my next trip to London. And that's possible. Yeah, pictures are possible. Yeah.
Okay.
Pictures are possible.
So look, stay tuned to the Facebook pages.
Yeah, where would you take President Emmanuel Macron?
I know, that's going to be interesting answers. Boy, I'm really looking sure. forward to
it. Yeah, some of them might say to a good tailor. And that's, of course, depending on your style choices. But no, he's immaculately dressed, and it has to be said.
That is true.
Yeah, he looks good.
So, what about you? Which three places would you take French President Emmanuel Macron were he to visit your city? Post photos of your three places on the RFI English Service Listeners Forum Facebook page. And remember, we're always happy to hear your ideas for bonus questions, so please send them in. You have until the 18th of November to get your answers to the quiz and the bonus question in. Be sure to tune in on the 23rd of November to hear if your answer wins a prize. As always, be sure you include your postal address with your postal code. And don't forget to let me know if you are a Miss, a Ms., a Mrs., or a Mr. I don't want to get it wrong.
Send your quiz answers to english.service@rfi.fr. That's english.service@rfi.fr. You can also text your answer to the Sound Kitchen mobile phone. dial +336 3112 9682. That's +336 3112 9682. Always include your postal mailing address, and if you have one, your RFI Club membership number.
Radio France International, The Sound Kitchen, Susan Owensby.
And now, more from and about you. It's time for the Listener's Corner. Take it away, baby brother.
The question you answered this week was, what is the most wonderful thing you've ever seen in a museum? Guess who's with you, Salim? Malik Momin Raza Koka, who also found that the relics of the Indus Valley Civilization in the Harappa Museum in Punjab, Pakistan, were the most wonderful thing he had ever seen in a museum.
Full disclosure, I had never heard about Harappa or the Indus Valley Civilization until you all wrote us about it, so thanks. What about you, Paul? Not in your history books either?
Indus. Indus sounds familiar from school about 40-odd years ago. No, 45. No, 50. A long time ago in a galaxy far, far away. But no, never heard about this civilization, you know. And this is one of the great things about doing this program and being here. You learn.
Oh, boy, you learn a lot. You really learn a lot. And here's another listener who was taken by art from the Indus Valley, Dipita Chakrabarty. She wrote, a mesmerizing statue of a dancing girl. She's a cute bronze figure standing 10.5 centimeters tall in an alluring dancing posture. I learned that it belonged to the Indus Valley civilization dating back to the 25th century B.C. Thanks, Salim, Malik, and Dipita for teaching us something new.
For Razia Khalid, it was a Buddha which she saw in the Lahore Museum. As she wrote, I was very impressed. It is very realistic, and it was just as I had imagined it from reading about it in my history book. For Debashish Gope, it was a coin from the Samudragupta period, which was from about 335 to 375 CE. Samudragupta was the second emperor of the Gupta Empire of ancient India and is regarded among the greatest rulers of India. For Jayanta Chakrabarty, it was, as he wrote, the preserved body of a human mummy in the National Museum in Kolkata. After reading the inscriptions, I was awed by the fact that it was 4,000 years old and had come directly from the tombs of the kings of Gurwa as an Egyptian gift to the museum in 1882. This priceless exhibit was wrapped in a painted cloth with the arms tied down to the sides. One can still observe the bones of the face, a crumbled head and feet. It is a spectacular sight that left me spellbound.
Ooh, Jayanta. In 2010, I had the great good fortune to visit Egypt. What a magical trip. And I could still climb down in all those tombs. There's another thing. Travel while you're young and your body will let you. Anyway, at the Egyptian Museum in Cairo, the old one, they have a new state-of-the-art museum now. Remember that incredible opening ceremony? Well, there were two huge crates just plonked down in one of the rooms. They were marked Younger Lady KV35. Photos are not allowed, but of course I snuck one. I sent the photo to a very good amateur Egyptologist friend, and he was astonished that the crates were just sitting there like, as he put it, a tub of laundry. Guess who Younger Lady KV35 was? As my friend Marty wrote to me, Younger Lady is a recently DNA-tested mummy who was the mother of Tut, either a minor wife of Akhenaten or maybe even Nefertiti herself. Can you imagine?
Ooh. Well, you see, when it comes to mummies, I just think of Scooby-Doo cartoons. And I can't say mummy. It has to be mummies. I thought of Scooby-Doo when I was in Cairo, actually. They are fantastic, those mummies. Absolutely brilliant. Rafik Kondakar wrote, I visited our National Museum in Dhaka, Bangladesh, for the first time with my grandfather in 1992. I was surprised when I suddenly saw our Proclamation of Independence letter. I had read about it many times in school, but it was wonderful to see it with my own eyes. I have since been to our National Museum many times, but I will never forget that first visit. Well, this is from Radhakrishna Pillai. He wrote, for me, it's two paintings by Raja Ravi Varma, my favourite artist. He's one of India's most celebrated artists. His work have immense cultural and artistic significance. The two paintings I refer to are Hamsa Damayanti and Shakuntala in the Thiruvananthapuram Museum. Both of the paintings depict scenes from the Mahabharata. They are captivating, serene, and introspective.
Father Stephen Wara was most impressed by a serene and introspective painting too, the Mona Lisa. As he wrote, I saw the Mona Lisa in the Louvre Museum in Paris. The painter, Leonardo da Vinci, gave her life sometime between 1503 and 1519, and she is probably the world's most famous painting.
Helmut Matt wrote about the Eco-Musée in Alsace, calling it a particularly beautiful place. It is the largest open-air museum in France, and you should definitely take a whole day to visit it all. The buildings from ancient times are a marvel in themselves. You can also learn about old crafts there. But the best thing for me is the local wood-fired bakery, where fresh bread is baked every day, which you can eat there or buy to take away. The aroma is beguiling, and it is simply fascinating to see how such wonderful things were created with such simple means hundreds of years ago. All the virtual, illusory world of today disappears into nothingness. So let's end with Swapan Kumar Chandra, who wrote, the most wonderful thing I have seen is in Kolkata's Indian Museum in my own city. The museum was established in 1814, making it the oldest museum in India. There's an astonishing collection of ancient sculptures and artifacts, particularly the 2,000-year-old Bahut Stupa railings. These artifacts, intricately carved with detailed scenes from the life of Buddha, evoke the grandeur of early Indian art and Buddhist iconography. What makes these railings so remarkable is their detailed narrative reliefs, which depict scenes from the Jataka tales, stories of the previous lives of the Buddha, as well as key moments from Buddha's life. The craftsmanship showcases the evolution of Indian stone carving, with intricate designs of mythological figures, floral motifs, animals and deities. Inscriptions on the railings are also an early example of Brahmi script, providing critical insights into the language, culture, and religious beliefs of ancient India. They are a vivid testament to India's rich cultural and spiritual history. And there you have it. Remember, everyone, this week's bonus question is, which three places in your city would you take France's President Emmanuel Macron? Do you have a bonus question idea? Well, if so, send it to us at The Sound Kitchen, all one word, no spaces, at rfi.fr.
That's it for today's Listener's Corner. Thanks, everyone, for participating, and a special thanks to Paul Myers for hanging out in the kitchen with us.
Wonderful to be back. Thanks very much. Yes.
it's your girl, Bella the Bee. Stay live, stay fly, stay loving. Asheo.
Okay, my friends, it's time to clear the table and wash the dishes. Thanks for joining us in the Sound Kitchen, and keep those cards, letters, emails, and text messages coming. Many, many thanks to Erwan Rome for his input and his mixing mastery. And thanks to you for listening. Be sure and tune in next Saturday, the 2nd of November, for the answer to the question about Marine Le Pen's embezzlement trial. The Sound Kitchen podcast is ready for you every Saturday on the RFI English website, rfienglish.com, or wherever you get your podcasts. I'll play you out with music from Erwan, our sound engineer, who's also a musician, and today he's chosen music from a young Frenchman, the saxophonist and composer Gaël Aurelu. Born in 1975 at Caen in northwest France, Aurelu began his career in 1992. In 1995, he won the top prize at the Vienna Festival competition and a year later at the La Défense competition. He caught the attention of several jazz luminaries and the invitations flew in. He's played with numerous ensembles at numerous festivals and made numerous recordings. It's a big career. Aurelu had always been interested in mixing electro jazz and rock with more traditional jazz, but he then became intrigued by music from La Réunion, France's overseas department and territory in the Indian Ocean. What came of that interest? Compositions that are a mélange of jazz and the island's traditional music, maloya, which has its origins in the music of African and Malagasy slaves, as well as the Indian indentured workers on the island. In 2017, Aurelu released an album, Identities, which features musicians from the island. And this is what Erwan has chosen for you to listen to, the title song from that album, Identities. Written by Aurelu, you'll hear him on saxophone with Florent Gac on the organ, and four musicians from the island, Vincent Filias, Emmanuel Félicité, and Jérôme Calciné on percussion, and Nicolas Beaulieu on the guitar. So here it is, Identities by Gaël Aurelu. Enjoy. And thanks again, Erwan, for another musical discovery. I'm Susan Owensby. Be well, do good work, be kind, and stay in touch. And remember, do not confuse human beings, our brothers and sisters, with their governments. Stay safe, my friends, and be a blessing. Be a rainbow in someone's cloud. Talk to you all next week.